Shocking. Absolutely shocking. Who would have thought it? The Lakers are the beneficiaries of a controversial call that helps them advance to Las Vegas and the in-season tournament semifinals. Wow, who saw that coming, Graves? What, a controversial call that went in favor of the Lakers? Wow, who
There's
saw
no
that
way
coming?
The NBA would do that, right? They don't want to see the Lakers in their primetime event. Come on, man. That was a legitimate missed call, you know.
Adam Silver's on the phone with the officials. Look, we've already got the Pacers in there. We need LeBron in there. We can't have the Suns and the Pelicans in the in-season tournament. We got to get LeBron in there. And then what do you know? Time out. Yeah, you got it, LeBron. You usually have to have possession of the ball, but it's LeBron. So, yeah, you got it. What do you need? Time out. Terrible call.
Terrible call. And you hate, you know, if the call is made in the first quarter, that's one thing. But this is a critical junction, a critical time in the game. Austin Reeves fumbled the ball. The Suns, they get that. They hit the layup. And what was it at that time? Was it a two-point game, I think, at that time? Because Yeah.
That's correct.
And so then you tie it up. And so because then Anthony Davis missed the free throw and then Kevin Durant heave. And so I understand these are the best officials in the world. But the problem is, you got the official on the far side where LeBron is. He doesn't even really have a great view of the play.
That's true.
You got the official closest to the ball, and that's where I wish they would have been able to come together and say, you know what? He didn't have control. Like, the official could have overruled his other official. And so the Lakers move on.
Yeah.
I know, Kings fans.
Freddie Finn is not happy.
It's PTSD all over again. It's like, oh my gosh, here we go again. The Lakers get the call. And it kind of marred what was otherwise a great four games of in-season tournament quarterfinal action.
Yeah, I think to what you said, that would help in a lot of cases, just taking a wider view of it all. Even in baseball, a lot of times, controversial calls, if the umpires would just get together, the officials would just get together. Hey, you know what? I think you missed that one. You know,
right.
Just confer.
It's okay.
Talk
it's
it
okay.
over. It was
right.
kind of an important call at that time.
Yeah, and you know, and I'm listening to Reggie Miller on the broadcast, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not a fan of Reggie the broadcaster. He's kind of annoying to me. That's just me, though. That's just my opinion. But he's screaming, basically, like, no, you can't call. You can't. People on Twitter, social media, at home, the whole world sees it. But for some reason, these officials couldn't see it. Mm-hmm. And I understand we got the benefit of review, replay, and everything. I will say this, though. Because we have the benefit of replay, and we can slow it down and everything, they don't have that at their disposal in that moment. And so I don't believe there was some conspiracy or anything. I just think the official got it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He just got it wrong in the most critical of times.
First of all, for what it's worth, I'm with you on Reggie Miller. I've gotten to the point now where I originally, when he started, I couldn't listen. And now I can tolerate him. And, you know, he's so passionate about it. I appreciate that. But, yeah, not my favorite announcer for what that's worth. I'm with you on that. But trying to give the officials the benefit of the doubt, which is hard. For Sacramento fans, hard for Freddie fan, hard for me. You can understand, to the point you made, where the official was, it was difficult to see. LeBron's basically next to you. You're trying to see through two guys to see if the ball's loose or not. It's just unfortunate that in this day and age of replay, and we're trying to get everything right, doing everything we can to get everything right, that there's no mechanism there for them to go, let's take a look at that. All right, you know what? You don't have that timeout.
Or maybe make that challengeable, too.
Exactly.
You know, maybe
whatever
Frank Vogel.
Some
mechanism to say, you know what? We just saw this. He didn't have control of the ball. We got to review this.
Yeah.
And then you go back.
Because you got the guys in Secaucus, right, that are supposedly looking at everything anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And you got eyes on it, like you said.
Yeah.
You know, like sort of the NFL, where the challenge comes from, the replay comes from the booth up top.
The eye
in
the sky.
The eye in the sky. Maybe the NBA needs to adopt that. And I understand, you know, it's the in-season tournament, it's December. But if this was an NBA Finals game, let's say, or something like that, something of that magnitude, this would really blow up. And so if I'm the NBA, you got to be proactive, I think, in these cases. And if I'm Adam Silver, you can't just sweep this under the rug. Oh, right. Mistakes happen. No, you got to do whatever you can. Do your best to make sure mechanisms are in place to correct mistakes.
Like if it was, say, game 6 of the Western Conference Final, something like that.
Yeah, something like that, you know? And here's the thing. And we're waiting for the 2-minute report to come out. The 2-minute report is trash. Let's call it what it is.
Yes.
It does nothing. Like, it doesn't even save face for the NBA. If anything, it probably makes fans even more angry, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because the 2-minute report's going to come out and it'll say something like, you know, Austin Reeves had control or correct non-call or whatever you want to call it. And it's just going to aggravate the fan base out there.
No matter what it says,
right.
It's going to further inflame things. There's nobody, as far as the people that actually have anything to do with what goes on, nobody likes the 2-minute report. But it does speak to the fact that the NBA, because of Donaghy and some other issues, people leap to those conclusions like, oh, it's rigged, it's fixed. That's why the NBA had to come up with a 2-minute report. They're trying to be as transparent as they can. And as you say, sometimes there are bad calls in a situation like that. It's simple to connect the dots and go, it's LeBron. Now, that's probably not the case, but for those of us in Sacramento, it's hard not to look at it.
If this was the Memphis Grizzlies getting this call, this would not be an issue today. This would not be a topic in Sacramento.
Would the Memphis Grizzlies get that call?
Exactly.
That's the question.
That's the question
Jackson,
right there.
You go, hey, you got to have the ball. I can't call a timeout.
Yeah, it's a bad look for the league when one of their marquee franchises and one of their marquee stars gets advantage with a call. That being said, the Phoenix Suns aren't a bad draw either. Phoenix, you know, they got Kevin Durant. They got Devin Booker, two of the top 10, 15 players in the league.
They got Bradley Beal, theoretically, too.
Theoretically, right. He'll be in there on the bench in street clothes. And so, no, it's a bad look. And if I'm Adam Silver, it was the worst possible outcome in terms of now we're not talking about the actual games. We're not talking about the quality of basketball. We're once again talking about the officiating.
But it was a great game, and to that extent, the tournament has been a huge success. As you know as well as I do, as anybody who watches this knows, the fact that the players are competing at a little bit of a higher level, that's what this all hinges on. If you got buy-in from the players, this was going to work, and so far, there's definitely been buy-in from the players.
Yes. And you saw that last night.
Yeah.
You saw that, just from LeBron and Durant and the level of competition. And I said it in the crossover with the guys, Allen and Chris, we could go back to the Celtics-Pacers game. That was a heavyweight fight. And look at the way the Pacers celebrated when they won that mm-hmm. game. If this was a regular season December game, they wouldn't celebrate like that. But because it clinched their spot in Vegas. And how about Giannis yesterday in the post-game press conference on the floor there when, I think it was Jared Greenberg maybe, told him, there's $100,000. No matter what happens, you advance to Vegas, you get $100,000. And he was like, really? He's like, he didn't even know, but he knew he was playing for something. And he said, oh, man, the rich get richer. That's what he said.
Yeah. Well,
which was hilarious.
Whether the league had any hand in it or not, you know that they're very relieved that they've got the Bucks advancing and they've got the Lakers advancing.
Right. And let's call it what it is. I understand fans, don't want to hear this. But from a business standpoint, obviously you want, competitive balance. But when you're looking at the bottom line, the dollars, you're trying to market your product, you're trying to sell tickets, the Lakers fan base, they travel. It's close to home right there. If it was, let's say, I don't know, I'm going to just throw somebody out there, Memphis again, mm-hmm. if the Grizzlies were in there.
Shots at the Grizzlies.
No, they're struggling this year, and they know John Morant. They don't have any sizzle. So let's say if it was the Grizzlies-Pelicans semifinal. There's no sizzle there.
You're right.
It's entertainment, and you're trying to sell tickets. So I get it if behind the scenes, the league may be secretly pulling for one of their legacy franchises.
Yeah, and let's face it. And again, I'm not suggesting the league they're gonna manipulate the results here at all. But I am saying I think in a way it would legitimize the whole tournament if you have the Lakers and the Bucks, then it's like, wow, you got two of your best teams. Whereas if you end up with, say, Pelicans, Pacers, it's like, I think that'd be a little underwhelming. Yeah. I would love it as a fan of those teams and those players and small market teams, but you know the league would love to have two of their big name franchises going head to head. It kind of shows that, look, this was all worth it. We got two really good clubs playing for this title.
Yeah, exactly. And here's the thing, to your point, you know, if it was, I'm not going to say Memphis this time. Let's say it's Detroit against Portland in the finals. Those two cities, they would love it. Their fan bases would. But the rest, all 28 other cities would be like, that thing, I'm not watching this. Right. And so ideally you want your best teams. It's sort of like the NCAA tournament, March Madness. Everybody likes the upsets in the first round until you get a small market team versus a small market team in a championship. Then nobody's watching. You want the blue bloods. Sure, you want some of them to get knocked off, but you want Duke, Kentucky in the final, Kansas, UCLA in the final, something like that.
Yeah, I'm not saying the league is going to manipulate the results, but I understand Dick Pivetta and Bob Delaney are going to come out of retirement to call the games in Las Vegas. That's which I think is kind of curious.
Let me ask you this though, because we grew up as NBA fans. Do you think the officiating is better now versus when we were coming up? And I bring this up because we clearly, growing up, saw officials sort of openly combative with players, back in the day. You don't see that. Like, these guys, for the most part, remain pretty professional. But back in the 80s, if I knew, so-and-so was refereeing the game, oh, man, I know we're going to get the, it's not as much anymore. There's a couple of them, Scott Foster, some of those guys, and Chris Paul have a real thing going right now. But I felt like that happened a lot more back in the day. And so I could argue the officiating is better today than it was back in the 80s.
I know last season, this season, we haven't played that many games yet. Last season, I thought the officiating was wildly inconsistent. And obviously, there are some truly great officials today, just as there were in days gone by. But last year, I thought the officiating at times was just head-scratching. I think a lot of it has to do with some of the newer rules and interpretations of the rules. And, they've addressed that with some of the, what's the rip-through? Is it legal? Is it not? What to travel now? But honestly, last year especially, I thought the officiating at times was impossible to even understand.
Yeah, yeah. I think, first of all, I'm going to just say, officiating is very difficult, especially in today's game. These players are actors out there. They are Academy Award winners with some of theirs, and the nuances of the rules as well. The travel rule. Now there's the gather you can do, and then the two steps all this. And so, I don't know what's a travel and what's not a travel anymore.
Right.
And so I know it's difficult for them. But when I look at the history of NBA officials, guys like Ken Maurer, Ken Maurer.
Joe Maurer's cousin, right?
Yeah, yeah. Earl Strom. Remember Earl Strom?
I do.
Dick Pivetta, obviously.
Nick Pivetta.
Yeah, Nick. Joey Crawford.
Yes.
Like, these guys, clearly, in my opinion, you could rattle them and get them upset, and they would go right back at you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that as more. So I think the emotion has been taken out of it to an extent, which is a good thing, I think, in the NBA.
Yeah, and I think in a way the officials have been neutralized. They've got to sit there. Oh, you didn't like that call?
Right.
Why didn't you like that? Tell me what you didn't like about it. All right, I'll keep an eye on it. We'll take a quick timeout. We'll come back with more on the state of officiating in the NBA. Also, what would winning the first IST, the in-season tournament, what, if anything, would it mean for LeBron's legacy? As the Drive guys keep rolling on. Not true. Appreciate the text, but this is just not true. From the 510, Kevon Whitey, Jamichael Gleason loves the Lakers. I do not love the Lakers. It's good for the league that the Lakers, I guess, are playing now for the, what is it? What do we call it? NBA Cup?
NBA Cup.
In the semifinals for the NBA Cup.
Yes.
I was really pulling for those Suns last night. Really pulling for the Phoenix Suns. But what does this mean for LeBron if he wins this thing? Big picture, we know that LeBron is one of those guys, one of the few guys that really has, an all-time great legacy. Where, and he's aware, keenly aware, everything he does now is going to reflect future generations look on his career? Because people will be looking, is this the greatest player ever? So in those terms, what would winning this tournament mean for LeBron? Would it mean anything?
I think it would. I don't think it would mean anything in his chase to be better than Jordan, you know, be the all-time greatest. But I think, and we talked about it, you know, earlier this week, last week, last couple weeks, to be the first champion of the in-season tournament, to be the first possibly in-season tournament MVP, and who knows what the in-season tournament will turn into. Right now, it's just a cool thing. All right, we're trying to learn. Who's to say in 10 years, like, it won't be something really great, you know, really grand that teams really are going hard out for?
It seems,
so I think I think it's big for LeBron.
And the main thing is, to me, it seems to matter to him. So that's
right,
why it's important. Right,
right. It's important. And, you know, anytime you can go down as the first, think about it. There might be a little section in that Basketball Hall of Fame for the in-season tournament or something. You know, just a little note. Like, you immortalize yourself, and there's nobody else that can say, you know what, we were the first team to win something.
Mm-hmm. Fellas, so, who's the first team to win the NBA championship?
Was it the Warriors, Philadelphia?
Have no clue.
No.
Name anybody off the roster.
No, I'm going St. Louis Hawks with Bob Pettit back in 1957.
Does that right now decipher anything of all the history that has been in the NBA?
No, but back then, the NBA, nobody cared about the NBA.
And let me say this, Jay. Chiming in over there trying to diss what LeBron and them are doing right now.
Yeah,
I get it. I see where you're going with
you
this.
You should be, too.
I see where you're going
with
this.
Might be rocking the wrong purple.
Oh, he calling me out. Like, hey, yep. I know who signs the checks, big fella. I know who
signs the checks.
Let me come on now. Slow your roll. Here's the thing, though. It means something to whoever won the first NBA championship. It may not mean nothing to me or to Whitey, or any, but to the people that actually won it, as what you pulled it up, right?
It was Philadelphia Warriors.
It was the Philadelphia Warriors. Yeah. Oh, well, then I'm definitely represent. Come on now. It means everything at first, you know? No, but I think to the people that win it, it means a lot. Like I said before, I don't think this moves the needle in terms of his legacy or anything like that, the way he's viewed, you know, next to Jordan. But for him and the other players, it's something that they can hang their hat on.
Well, that's the thing. Jay may be right. I was talking to somebody today who's been in the NBA a long time, and they said, hey, this is great, but in 4 years, nobody's going to care. Now, I don't see it that way. I hadn't considered that. But this is a view of someone who spent some time in the league saying, I just think this thing, once the novelty wears off, nobody's going to care. It's possible.
It's possible.
Or it's also possible that 20 years from now, people go, oh, remember the first one? That was the best one. And LeBron and the Lakers. Because, you know, the league.
Look
it's
at
already,
the Super Bowl.
The script's already done. The Lakers have already won this thing.
You don't think the league would want the Bucks and Giannis?
They want them in the finals.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. You haven't seen the script?
Tyrese and the Pacers?
Nope.
No, but think about it like this, fellas. The NBA, to Whitey's point, at the time was a small thing. It wasn't this
really
huge
small
entity. And so, to, you know, what you brought up with the person in the NBA who says 4 years, nobody might not care. Who knows? Nobody cared that the Philadelphia Warriors won the first championship in 46, 47, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's like it grew into this big thing. And who knows with this in-season tournament. And I believe over time you might see some tweaks. Maybe it's an automatic playoff berth. Maybe it's an extra draft pick. Like, you know, who knows what it's going to develop into. And so I do think it's here to stay. I think it's been great for the NBA. They're getting what they want out of it. More eyes, I think, are on it. More interesting games. And here we are, December 5th, 6th, talking about a Suns-Lakers basketball game.
Right.
Think about it.
Well,
it's in-season tournament. It's
done
that.
They pulled it off. The NBA, one of the big reasons they wanted to do it is because they wanted to make the early season games more meaningful. Because,
yes,
you know, the NBA season really, in recent years, hasn't started until Christmas, right? Christmas Day, you have the games. That's when people start paying attention.
Right.
So the league recognized that. They decided to do something about it. I didn't think it would work, but it's worked so far. We're not even all the way through the first year yet, but so far, they've done it.
Yes, yes. They have done it. And, you know, before it started, everyone was sort of, why do we need this? Nobody cares or anything like that. But it was the same argument with the play-in tournament. Also, you know, for the playoffs.
Like, it's true.
People are
it's
like,
true.
you know, you play a whole season. Why do you need extra games to try and figure out who gets in and everything like that? And now we love the play-in tournament.
Yes.
Exactly. And so, the NBA has done a good job. Like I said, I think there will be some tweaks, some changes. There's things you go on. You learn from it, obviously. You know, the court situation. I'm not too bothered by the courts either. You know, some of them are a little gaudy. But then you look at the Kings court. I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it looks fine to me. You look at the Bucks court, that looks fine.
But you mentioned earlier the Celtics are complaining about the court.
The quality of the court.
Oh,
well,
okay.
Yeah,
right.
Like they say it's too slippery.
Okay.
And I will say there's a segment of that fan base who are like, what about our beloved parquet floor too?
I'm not a Celtic fan, but I've had a problem with that.
Yeah, but it's only a few games, White. It's two games.
But a part of it could still be parquet floor. It's the freaking Boston Celtics. I can't stand them. I could never stand them. But
in the whole scheme of life, what does it hurt? Like, really, it's two basketball games.
Mm-hmm.
What does it hurt? You know? It's sort of like, you know, it was the Bucks a few years ago. Remember they played on the old Marquette court, the Mecca?
Yes, I do.
You know? Well, that was a different floor. Was it the Bucks' original floor? And so I just...
You know what I remember about that is Kyrie said, it's not safe for us to play on this old floor. And someone had to point out to him, it's a replica.
Right. It's not the original from 1970. Right.
Kyrie, no. It's not the old floor. It just looks like
it. Yes, yes.
Jay, you mentioned, 46, first year of the NBA. If that was the first year of the NBA, I'm going to get in trouble for asking this question, but how are the Kings having their 100th anniversary? That's the... Okay, I'll go along with it. But the NBA's only been around since 1946.
Do we got to school you on this, Whitey?
No, I know the story. Yeah, okay.
They've been playing basketball for the NBA.
Somebody
right. has. Right, it hasn't been in the NBA, but there's been a team that over the years morphed into what we have right now, the Sacramento Kings.
Speaking of Jay, I was happy to give him finally the sugar cookies from Fat Cat Bakery. They delivered these back in November, and then you were gone, and I was gone, and you got your oatmeal raisin from Fat Cat Bakery.
You know why I like these cookies, and I haven't even tried them yet? I'm a big fat cookie guy. Like I like the massive size cookies, you know?
Yeah.
And it's chewy and everything.
It's like a
mantle
cover.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I like these. So shout out to Fat Cat Bakery. I can only probably have one, but man, I can't wait to dive into these.
Well, you got,
dude. My son likes so oatmeal raisin also. Yeah, I appreciate it, man. This was a great day, man. I appreciate this. This is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we appreciate you listening to Eric and everybody at Fat Cat Bakery. When we come back, the oddest thing about this Kings season, is it a good thing or a bad thing? By the way, 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140 if you want to weigh in on that travesty that we saw last night at the end of the Laker game. It's a drive. An interesting little skirmish has broken out on the chat, YouTube chat here, Sacktown Sports. Thanks for being with us. Basically, it comes down to who's better, LeBron or Michael Jordan, based on the eras, which, you know, normally when people are arguing about basketball in the eras, they're talking about the days when Wilt played as opposed to the days of today. But it's interesting. We've got that conversation going on now. Like, oh, the guys Michael Jordan played against, they'd be plumbers today. I'd never heard that before. But the reason I bring that up, it's an interesting conversation. I'm wondering what you think of this. I'm reading this book right now by a guy named, I think his name's Rich Cohen, and it's called When It Was a War. Basically, his whole premise is that 1987-88, that season, which was the Lakers beat the Pistons in the finals. He says that was the greatest season in NBA history because, he says, you had the Lakers right at the end of their dynasty. You had the Celtics. Their dynasty was just ending with Bird, great team. You had the Pistons that were about to become a two-year mini dynasty. And on the horizon, you had those Bulls. So he says you had great players, which you do in any era. But this guy's contention is you had more great teams in that period, that year specifically, than we've ever had before. I don't know how you could ever, you know, go about proving that.
Quantifying that,
I never thought of that before, and it's a really interesting point.
No, that was, you know, when you look at it, probably the golden era of the NBA, you know, because it was the end of the Larry Bird Celtics sort of coming to an end. Magic and them were still competing. You know, they were still, you know, they went back to the finals in 91, obviously. But when you look at it, to your point, those are legacy, like, franchises.
And they were all at one time.
At one time.
Overlapping.
Lakers, Celtics, Pistons, Bulls, like you said. My only comparison, and I'm trying to think of it, could be maybe... No, I can't even compare. You know, I'm thinking when the Spurs were coming on, Lakers with Kobe and Shaq, you know, but that was really only two teams at that time. I was thinking LeBron and the Cavs and the Golden State Warriors, but it was only two teams, you know?
Yeah.
I need an era where, and think about it, when you look at it too, Lakers won back-to-back, Pistons won back-to-back, Bulls won three in a row twice.
Yeah.
Like, you had, you know, multiple dynasties at once sort of going, you know? And so, no, you're right. You're right, man.
Yeah, I'd never considered that before. One of the things that I think is different about that era, for the most part, is that back then, and this is, you know, 87, 88, early 90s, I do think there was more team pride. Team pride still exists. But now, there are more guys, some players, not all, are more like businessmen, where, you know, hey, I'm playing for this team because you know what? They give me the most money.
Right.
I'm going to try to win. And it's understandable. I don't begrudge that. But I think in the 80s, late 80s into the 90s, you had more of that, this is my team, and I want to win for my team. And it was, in a way, almost a more innocent time.
Yeah, it was an innocent time. But when you look at that period, the owners had more power than they do now.
Like, I understand.
The players are... You know, their own businesses. They run things.
I don't begrudge
right
them.
Now.
Yeah.
And from a marketing standpoint, the league markets individuals more. So they've empowered the players in that right. And so I think you look at a guy like Dominique, let's say. Great career. Never won a championship in Atlanta for it. Nowadays, 5-6 years at one place. If you don't see the writing on, you know, it's like, all right, I got to go somewhere else.
You better bring someone else in or I'm leaving.
Yeah, or I'm leaving. Now, is that a player issue? Is that a league issue? Is that an owner issue? Or is that a media fan issue? Have we created that where we invalidate people's careers if they don't win a championship? I'm watching TNT all the time, Chuck, Shaq, and all those guys, and Shaq, every single show, talks about his rings and the ones that Barkley does it. And so as a player, you don't want to be that guy ridiculed and not invited to the party and to the club if you don't have a ring. And so that's why guys are jumping around so much.
Mm-hmm. And as you said, they just have more power.
Yeah.
And so they because there's so much money, they have the ability to say, I'm going to go find a better situation for me. And guys didn't have that freedom before. I will say, we mentioned this today on our podcast, I do think it's cool that you got right now in Sacramento two guys in Domas and De'Aaron Fox who want to be here. And they're taking pride in Kings and in building something. Not everybody has that, but that's why this team is so beloved. One of the reasons is because we haven't had that a lot here in Sacramento, Kyle. Sometimes we have guys here, they come here, it's like, well, I'll make the best of it. And then sometimes they do, and they grow to love it. But these guys both want to be here, and it's refreshing and it's different.
It really is. And, you know, what you're saying is Sacramento is becoming a hip place, a cool place for players. I think you look at what happened with Malik Monk. But to your point, with De'Aaron Fox, you know, I was just talking about a guy 5-6 years in saying, all right, I want – De'Aaron's never said that. He's never, you know, despite all the losing, and let's keep it real, Kings fans – if De'Aaron, after year five, said, you know what, I want out of here, I wouldn't begrudge him because of what he's had to go through here, you know, from a personnel standpoint, a general manager's head coach standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but he stuck it out. And I think,
Broadcasters
did. I'm talking, though. Before me, I feel you, De'Aaron, before me, you know. I just think, you know, it's – and I think that's also – and I hate to always bring this up because this is a sore spot for people. That was also why it was so hard to see Tyrese Halliburton go as well. Because he also embraced it and wanted to be here and wanted to change things here in Sacramento.
Yeah, that's right. So you should look at the Kings record right now, 11-8. One of the things that we've talked about, and you can't help but notice, it's a little odd, is that they have 8 losses, but they've only lost to 4 different teams, right? Warriors twice, Rockets twice, Pelicans 3 times now, and the Clippers once. So as you look at that, hey, they've only lost to 4 teams. Do you see that as, is that like a positive or is it a negative?
I think it's a positive. I think, you know, if they were, you know, getting ran out, and you look at the teams that they're losing to, Warriors, as much as I give them mess, they're going to be a playoff team. Pelicans, they're going to be right there in the mix too, I think. Houston, maybe you can look back and say, you know what, you know, they're going to be on the outside looking at. Losing to the Clippers, there's nothing wrong with that. And so now if they're losing, you know, they got Brooklyn coming up on Monday, you know, then that's a concern for me. You know, I think you got the Clippers after that. You know, you got Washington coming up. If you're losing those games, then I would be concerned. With that being said, come April, late March, I'm looking at the standings, and if I'm the 3 seed and I see the Pelicans possibly as the 6 seed, I don't know, Whitey. I might be trying to do some maneuvering. I'm just saying. Wow. It's just matchups that I just don't want to see. And we talked about it last year, too, towards the end of the regular season. Man, you don't want to see the Warriors in the playoffs. You don't want to, you know, and we almost had them. We should have had them. But there's a reason why they're the champs and they're the Warriors. That Game 7, they got us. And that was the biggest reason why, because they're not going to just fold or lay down or anything like that. They have championship medal, championship pedigree, and that's why we lost. And so, you know, if in April, late March, you know, you start looking at the matchups, and I'm not saying lose on purpose, but maybe you try to catch the 2 seed or something like that to get a more favorable matchup.
Yeah, I see that side of it. I think ultimately, to me, the fact that you've lost only to 4 teams, there's a real downside to it, and it's
really
this. Well, and we've seen it especially with the Pelicans. Like, they beat you, all right, you know what they are, you know how you need to beat them, and you can't do it, all right, you get another chance. Wow, you still can't do it. And when you lose to some of these teams repeatedly, Houston, we know you were there calling the games, and you got shoved around. There's been a similar pattern in some of these games. The Warrior thing is they're a fine team, and they finally beat them. But Houston and the Pelicans, the way they were more physical than the Kings, and they beat the Kings at things that the Kings know and recognize they need to be better at, that's what's troubling to me. The 3 losses to the Pelicans, to me, make it clear that, you know what, if you want to be the team that you want to be and expect to be this year, there are going to have to be some adjustments, if not changes made.
So it's not necessarily the team, but it's the style that which you're losing these games. It's like, you know, it's clear as day we have trouble with long, physical, athletic teams.
Right.
Yeah, I hear you on that.
Yeah.
And there's a few of them out there.
Exactly.
You know? And so if you run into them in the playoffs, what are you going to do?
Yeah,
you know?
If you have problems with that type of team, you can't really expect to win a championship.
Right. You can't, you know, duck and dodge and try and hide, you know, or anything like that. No, I get your point, you know. It's sort of like, you know, when you look at the NFL, if a quarterback has trouble against zone coverage, you can't just all of a sudden, you know, I hope they only play man-to-man, or you hope you run into a less physical team. I mean, you're going to find one at some point as you progress in the playoffs.
If there's an upside, perhaps it is that, okay, you learn that in December, and then you've got plenty of time to figure it out whatever it is you're going to do about that.
Yeah.
Whether that is make a deal,
right,
whether that is lineup adjustments, whatever it is, you've got a lot of time to recognize, all right, we have to do some things to get to where we want to be.
Yeah, and I look at a team like Denver. They were able to play any different style. You know, you look at the Lakers. Horrible matchup for Golden State. Well, Denver made quick work of them.
Right.
Denver, you know, has built a team that they can run with you. They can grind you out in a half court. They can win by defense as well. They can win by shooting. And so if you're Monty McNair, you want that versatility from your team, right? You don't want to just, you know, I look at the Indiana Pacers this year, having a solid season. But their thing is, we're just going to try to run and outscore you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
As we know, in the playoffs, it slows down a little more physical. You know, you can't just do that. And the Kings learned that last season. And so if I'm Monty, I'm trying to build a roster that can win multiple different ways.
Yeah, and I think it's fascinating that the Kings, it appears, Mike Brown especially, has looked at last year and saw the success, of course, and enjoyed the success of last year, but said, we don't want to be that again.
Right.
I mean, we want to win a lot of games,
right.
But the team that just plays offense and blows the doors off people, that's great, but we probably can't count on that year to year. So we have to be more than that. and they're in the process of figuring out how they're going to do that.
Yeah, and Scooter 916 on the YouTube chat raises an interesting question, Whitey, and we've sort of talked about this before. Drapes and Whitey, you both make great points. I feel like we have an identity crisis at the moment. Does that seem off base? What do you think? I think we know who we are, but we're not who we want to be.
I agree.
If that's it.
Yeah. You know. And backing up again, I know we talked about a lot yesterday when Kevin Herter talks about they want us to do this and that's making it hard to do the things that we did before. It's pretty clear that the organization, Mike Brown specifically, is saying this is what we've been, but we need to be this as well now. And it's not easy for the team.
It's not easy. But, you know, and one thing we're seeing, they're sort of trying to change on the fly, overnight. You know, it's like...
With the same people, right.
Yeah. If you want to be a tough, hard-nosed defensive team, well, you're going to have to go out there and get tough, hard-nosed defensive players. And so Mike Brown's asking a lot of his team, even Keegan Murray. Let's talk about that really quickly here. I don't think anybody looked at Keegan as a defensive stopper last season. But Mike Brown is putting him on some of the game's best players and asking a lot of him defensively. So I think Mike Brown is asking something from his guys that we haven't seen yet. Mm-hmm. Can they get there? I don't know. That will, you know, be left to be seen. But he's asking something out of his players, and we have to hope that they can actually deliver on that.
Are the Kings right now dealing with an identity crisis? 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. The conversation rolls on with the drive, guys, when we come right back on Sacktown Sports. I got to give credit to Kings fans. A lot of Kings fans, based on the responses we're getting so far here, the YouTube chat, text line, or calls. Kings fans doing a lot better for the most part than I was doing with the result of that Laker game last night, seeing the Lakers get the benefit of that horrible, horrible call. I guess maybe at some point, Kyle, I just got to let it go, right?
You just got to let it go.
2002 was a long time ago.
You know, and, you know, it was a long time ago, but I feel you, Sacramento Kings fans. I understand. You just know when you face the Lakers, you can't beat them by one or two. You got to beat them by 10 or 15. You know what I mean? You can't let it come down to the final minute or two because LeBron is going to get the calls. We know that.
Typically, I really appreciate it when a player refuses to complain about a controversial call. I know Devin Booker posted, I think it was on Instagram, and he had a picture of him with the ball while LeBron's asking for the timeout, and he took it down.
Durant took it down.
Yeah. Durant was asked about it. He said, you know what? Doesn't come down to one call like that. And I wanted him to be mad. Usually a guy does that, as he did earlier this year when he got, you know, the Spurs did some things to him to steal a ball that they're actually illegal in three states, and they stole a ball.
Oh, yeah, remember that?
And he said, you know what? It doesn't come down to one call. I should have taken care of the ball. But I wanted him to be angry last night and say, there's no way they should have gotten a timeout. But KD was like, I guess, you know, there's a little zen in that. I don't know. But like, hey, you know what? It doesn't come down to one play like that. We still had our chances.
Yeah, but you know, and what people will say, well, there's a million calls throughout the rest of the game. There's a million, you know. But no. When it's the final seconds of a game,
and the ball's rolling on the floor,
like that directly impacts the outcome. So I'm with you, man. I'm surprised they aren't more upset about that.
Yeah, Frank Vogel wasn't happy about that, but you know the league's happy, not because they had anything to do with it, but because now they get the Lakers moving on to Vegas. And that's part of it, too. It makes it harder for me that the Kings are not going to Vegas. The fact that the Lakers are makes it harder to accept.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see the Kings and the Lakers. That would have been great.
No, you're right, man. That would have been a huge matchup, a great matchup. And, you know, not only to see the Lakers, I want to know how the Kings fans feel about this. You see Tyrese Halliburton
in
Vegas also. You know, and there's this narrative with Tyrese. We love Tyrese. I'm a big fan of Tyrese. But I don't know if it's the league that's pushing him, the media, whatever. But he is the golden child of the NBA right now. There's talk of him in the MVP conversation where our guy De'Aaron Fox is putting up just as good numbers, you know, better scoring numbers, obviously. The Kings have a better record, but yet Tyrese is getting all that love. And so he's the golden child, man. So you throw in LeBron, you throw in Tyrese, and it's like we're rooting for a Bucks-Pelicans finals here in Sacramento right now.
I love Tyrese. I did not like it when they traded him. I was doing some stuff in the Bay Area at the time he was drafted, and I thought, wow, the Warriors should have taken him maybe even as high as two. He was that good. But let's just, since we're talking about it, let's just settle this once and for all here. Because there's, you know, after Tyrese had the big triple-double Monday, there was more talk of, ooh, maybe the Kings, ooh, maybe they kept the wrong guy. That there's nothing to that narrative. It makes no sense. Because A, the Kings had Tyrese and Fox here at the same time and it didn't work. And B, keeping Tyrese Halliburton and getting Sabonis was not an option.
Right, right.
You couldn't do that. So right. It's ridiculous to suggest, ooh, they should have handled that differently.
If you would have not made the trade, you would not be in the position you are right now. Now,
yes.
If Kings fans still want to be, you know, losers and missing the playoffs, okay, you can say that. But that trade directly has impacted the Kings and led them to winning. Without that trade, you're not in a position you are right now.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we're at a point here where Monty McNair has to stare down the barrel of another potentially huge but potentially very risky deal this year?
That's a great question. And, you know, I wouldn't put anything past Monty McNair if he feels like it will improve the team. But when you say risky, huge, to me, I hear Fox, Sabonis, or Keegan. Those are the three, you know, anything outside of that.
Really?
Yeah, is, you know, I could understand it. I could understand it. So, you know, when you say that, I'm talking shocking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wouldn't be shocking if he moved on from some of the other guys, but if he traded one of those three, that would be shocking.
To me, one of the biggest risks would be, and I know we've talked about this and you know this, but if you were to get rid of some of your current and future assets to bring in a guy who you know makes you better right away but may not be here. And of
you
course,
can't
we're
do
talking
that, right?
about we're talking about the two guys in Toronto.
You have to know you're going to re-sign those guys. You can't trade, because when you do make that trade, not only are you giving up draft capital, you're giving up a couple of key members of your team, probably, you know? And so just for a 6-month rental or 4-month rental, I would have to know these guys are re-signing and going to be here. And so
I go back and forth on it, but I think you're right.
Yeah, yeah. And what Kings fans, I think, you know, and this is just my personal opinion, what we're about to discover is that the NBA is a cruel business. As much as we love loyalty and try to reward loyalty, Monty McNair's job, the organization's job, is to win a championship, compete for a championship. Now, the moves might not always work out, you know, but in the interest of trying to get better, sometimes you're going to have to maybe lose a fan favorite a la a Tyrese Halliburton.
Don't you think, everything else being equal, OG and Anunoby is a perfect fit here? And I'm not talking about what it would cost to get him, but just in a perfect world, if you could say, hey, why don't you come over here? Don't you think he'd be a perfect fit?
Yeah, he's a tough, hard-nosed player, a true two-way player who I think hasn't even scratched how good he could be offensively. We know he could be good defensively. For some reason, he hasn't taken the leap offensively in Toronto. I think we can unlock him a little more. But no, you're right. I love OG as a player. He's the kind of player that I think the Kings need, not only on a defensive end, but he has upside still left on the offensive end as well. And so
that's why I go
would
back
love
and forth, because I'm with you. It's like, that's perfect.
Yes.
Short term, near term.
Short term.
Yeah, and beyond that, what do you give up
but,
to get him?
Right.
And then what if you give up future assets to get him, and then he's here for the rest of the season, and then he says, see you later.
Does OG make you a championship contender? Does he, like, you know, you look at what Toronto did with Kawhi Leonard, for instance. That was a rental. That was a one-year thing, and he brought him a championship. Was it worth it for them? Would it be worth it for Sacramento to do a one-year rental or a half-season rental if it got you to the NBA Finals?
If it got you to the Finals, yeah. I don't know if you're close enough. But again, this is what I've been wrestling with, because there's times when I see it the way you just laid it out, like, it's too risky. There's other times I think, he's such a good fit, and you've got a good team now. Who knows when you're going to have a shot at being anywhere near the Finals again? Why not roll the dice? But I don't think Monty McNair looks at it that way.
Yeah, I don't think he looks at it that way. And I'm trying to wrap my head around, Whitey, whoever we get, who's the player that actually makes us a championship contender? Who makes us a Finals contender? Is it Zach LaVine? Is it Caruso? Is it OG? Is it Pascal Siakam? I don't know. I don't know if that player's out there right now. For this season I'm talking about, who makes us a championship contender?
Siakam is generally considered a bigger star and better player than Anunoby. I don't know that he fits as well, But, I mean, he's a guy that could be available. Toronto would, because they're going to lose him anyway, you could probably get one of those guys.
Here's the thing. As much as I love Siakam, I like OG, I think you need a bona fide number two. Like, you look at, like, for instance, Denver. Jamal Murray has never played in an All-Star game. But playoff Jamal Murray is a real
pretty
thing.
Pretty good player.
That's a pretty darn good player. That's a top 20 player in the NBA. You know, Pascal, at his best, when it's time to win a championship, can he be that guy, a top 15 player?
Maybe, but he needs the ball a lot, and then that throws everything else you're doing out of whack.
You know, I think you need, you know, a Devin Booker type, Kevin, like, you got to go against those guys. You got to go against LeBron and AD. You got to go against Steph Curry. Like, who are the guys that are going to put you over the top against those teams?
Tom Tuwitty on the chat says, better to compete for four seasons more than to go for it this season and not make it the next 3 years.
You buying that? You buying that?
Yeah, deep down, I believe that's right. But it's just, I feel like, boy, you got a chance to do something this year. And you never know when you're going to have chances like that.
Yeah, yeah. And but when I look at, you know, what we have in the Western Conference, if those moves, like, to me, getting Kawhi Leonard for Toronto was a no-brainer. That's a no-brainer for them. That Kawhi Leonard's a top 10 player when healthy in this league. Does OG really move that needle that much?
Not that much. No. I mean, there's no way.
Does Pascal Siakam move that needle that much?
But okay, the other side is you don't do that this year.
But to Tom's point, in the YouTube chat, you're slowly building. You know, we had this conversation the other day. You look at what Denver did. They didn't do a quick fix and win overnight. They had some heartbreak. They had some setbacks. They had some injuries, but they kept with the slow grind. They kept their core together, kept building, tinkering here or there, and then bam, they eventually broke through.
The danger, though, don't you think, is you don't want to be in that middle ground where you're neither one of the best teams in the league that's legitimately competing, nor are you a team that's tanking and stockpiling. You don't want to be in that middle ground where it's hard.
Or do you? Let me ask you this, and I hear your point, and I used to think that as well. And I know this team hasn't won a championship, but Miami's been that ever since LeBron left. They've never bottomed out. They've never went out there and got the biggest of the biggest free agents. And so I could argue that there's something about organizational culture and trying to build that and nurture that where, you know, Miami's been to the finals two or three times. You know, sure, they haven't won it, but they've been in the mix even despite some of their regular season success. And so if I'm Sacramento, that's what's so great about this game, Whitey. It depends on however Monty McNair thinks. You know, does he swing for the fences? Does he pull a Daryl Morey and trade for a James Harden type? Or do you slowly build it like they did in Denver?
More on that when we come back. Also, a look at how we could improve the very successful in-season tournament. It's the Drive Guys roll on Sacktown Sports.